say ah. It's time for Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. And now, Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. And folks, you know, we're talking today about implants. You know, people have questions about implants, which they're a relatively new phenomenon, are they not, Dr. Edelstein?
Yes and no. They've been around. The current implant design has been around for about 40 years. The father of modern implant dentistry is Professor Brandemark. He was an orthopedist doing research on bone healing in Sweden, and he discovered something very interesting. They were looking at the way different long bones in rabbits would heal, and they used different cylinders of different types of metal. And what he discovered, is if the cylinder was made out of titanium, then the bone grew so intimately to the titanium that it couldn't be removed. Unlike any other metal.
Wow.
Yeah, so titanium.
You said, yeah, that's good. It was in Sweden, you
yeah,
said,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just got it. Okay, I'm a little slow
that's
today.
Right.
But titanium metal is invisible to the body. The body grows right to it. So if there's any grooves or pores or micro texture to the metal, the bone literally fuses right to it. And it's predictable. It's not rejected. And it's very, very interesting. So Professor Brandemark has been credited as the father of modern implants. Implants predated that, but they were much different in nature and didn't have anywhere near the success rate that we have today.
For how long have we been, I mean, you said about 40 years ago.
Yes.
But for the most part, how long have we been implementing this research?
The current research?
Yeah. I guess they're 40 years old, but I sure don't remember them 40 years ago. I mean, how long generally have
Well, when I did my residency 30, 35 years ago, there was one three-hour lecture on implants. Shortly thereafter, I'm talking 30 years ago, the science and the technology mushroomed. And literally, it's the standard of care in dentistry today to replace a tooth. It is absolutely a marvelous advancement in dentistry. When I went through dental school 35 years ago.
At Emory. While I still had a dental school.
Yes. A good one, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
If a tooth was lost for whatever reason, periodontal disease, root canal failure, trauma, the way to replace it was with a fixed bridge. And the problem is that the adjacent teeth had to be literally ground down to little stubs. And there is trauma to the adjacent teeth. They're hard to clean around, floss around. There's an incidence of decay, of root canal problems in the adjacent teeth. So fixed bridges were not a perfect solution. Implants are far superior because it's a single tooth solution to a single tooth problem, and you don't invade the adjacent teeth. So it's been a marvelous advancement over the last 30-plus years that they've been in mainstream dentistry, and it is the standard of care, if at all possible, to replace a tooth or many teeth with implants.
What has this done to the world of dentures?
Well,
has it reduced the number of dentures that people are getting?
Yes.
Taking their teeth out of their mouth and putting it in a cup at night?
Yes. Well, what it's done is, if you think about it, if there is a posterior tooth missing, previously, we would replace it with a bridge. A bridge would last anywhere from 5 to 15 years. An adjacent tooth would have decay, need a root canal, break off. So then the bridge has to be replaced with a bigger bridge. And then the bigger bridge has to be replaced with a partial. And a partial has a clasp and rocks the tooth closest to the front. And that tooth eventually needs to be replaced because it is rocked till
like
the dogs come
out. Domino effect.
Yes. And then that person eventually needs a denture. So this breaks that syndrome where a single tooth or two teeth can be easily replaced with one or two implants. And and the longevity of them is far superior to a bridge itself.
You know, you talked about grinding down the adjacent teeth with a bridge.
Yes.
So perhaps this is a naive question. Can those teeth grow back at all?
No.
Once they're ground down, that's it.
That's it. They're gone. You don't get them, but you don't get them back.
So you do it with great care, I guess.
Sharks can, but we can't.
Yeah, that's right.
A shark will grow another set of teeth, but we can't.
What is it, the liver? Is it, I think, the only organ in the body that'll regenerate?
You could be right.
You take out half the liver and the rest of it'll grow back.
I believe that's accurate.
So let's get Sue Skipper in here. Sue, how long have you been working with implants? Because you've been in the business for a long time.
Yeah, since I started working with Dr. Edelstein about 20 years ago.
It's an amazing advancement, is it not?
Yeah.
It's a great innovation.
It is. Until I started working with him, heard about them, thought that sounded neat, but the dentists that I was working for at the time, we had never restored an implant. We certainly didn't surgically place them. They were restorative dentists. So when I started with Dr. Edelstein 20 years ago, we did some, you know, and it was a big deal when we had the implant scheduled for the week. You know, now we'll have an implant every day.
Right, we got an implant Thursday. You
know? Yeah, I mean, it was like a big deal. And we were all excited and nervous at the same time.
I remember being up all night.
Yeah.
But the night before.
Yeah. we would set aside the surgical suite for 3 hours. Now we have an implant, a single tooth implant. Once the patient gets numb and we're ready to rock and roll, we put it in 20 minutes.
Yes.
Without a surgical, it's not even a surgical placement. No incisions, no sutures.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
I'm probably jumping ahead here, but is it, you know, from what I read, you sent me some information from which to do some research. It doesn't look like it's covered by insurance for the most part, and it just seems like a flaw in our system because this is a medicine. This is medicine.
It is. It is, and some dental insurance companies are actually recognizing implants are superior to other forms of tooth replacement, and there is some coverage beginning. But one thing, Jeff, to keep in mind, dental insurance, which I do want to do a show on dental insurance, by the way, sometime over the next month or so, but dental insurance was never intended to be comprehensive. There has always been very strict limits on yearly maximums, and it is just not intended to be a comprehensive insurance vehicle.
Is that a flaw in our system, or is it okay?
I just think folks need to realize that dental insurance is a small benefit and has never been intended to be comprehensive. It didn't start that way, and it still isn't.
Has the cost of implants gone down over the years?
I'm sure they have, yes.
You know, you're saying it originally, you know, it was a 3-hour procedure, and
yes,
you had all your operatories ready, and
but back then, our fee was less still.
Sure.
We just kept up with the pace of inflation, to be quite
barely.
Fair.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah.
Hey, let me mention this, too, because you're going to have a lecture at Brio, one of my favorite restaurants. It's on Peachtree.
Yes.
Where is it? Peachtree near Far Road, I would say, you know, just a little
it's
bit south
the Peach,
of Far
next
Road.
To the Peach Shopping Center.
Next to the Peach Shopping Center. And that's on Thursday, September 10th at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
And you're going to have some hors d'oeuvres for us?
Yes, heavy hors d'oeuvres.
Excellent.
For anyone interested in more.
The heavier the better.
Of course.
And they're heavy.
And
I've ordered them already. They're heavy. They're good.
And we'll have a cash bar. And what we have found is that folks have a lot of questions about implants. They may have a friend that may have interest in it.
You said friend like you were making quotation marks.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's what they say to you. I have a friend who...
Of course.
Yeah. I have this friend.
I have a friend. And folks may have a friend, and they may have some questions for their friend that they can convey to us. And it's free. There's no cost. And we do it as a public service just to help people make decisions about what might be the best decision for them.
Yeah, I asked you this last week, but I think it might be beneficial to ask it again for those who didn't hear last week's show. And that is that sometimes after the lecture, people will come up to you individually.
Yes.
Some of you might have 20 people at the lecture, and some people are just reticent about asking questions in front of others. They'd rather they like one-on-one. So they might come up to you individually afterwards, correct?
Correct. Happens all the time.
And they may ask about their friend.
Yes. You know? Yes, it happens all the time. Even with his peers, if he's speaking at a local dental meeting or a national dental meeting. Even dentists will come up privately. Some people are just shy, you know, and that's what this platform is for.
Yep. How do you get these lectures? You've lectured many, many times in many places before, often very large numbers of your peers. So obviously you're what I would consider to be at the top of your profession. Is this something that just kind of caught on for you? Maybe somebody saw a lecture that you gave and you know how it becomes viral in a sense. You know, they tell a friend or they say, hey, can you do this? Can you speak again to our group in Chicago next month?
This probably spans 25 years where I gave a couple of small programs to dental study clubs locally. And then that grew to more of a national or regional presentation. And then over the past 2 years, I've given lectures in Boston, Chicago, California, Southern California, Hawaii. That wasn't a bad
trip. Yeah, really. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, to Hawaii. And of course, we had to stop off at Maui and for a few days.
That's rough work.
That was rough, but someone's got to do it. So, and you know, there are dentists in Maui that need information too. So, so it was a pleasure and a privilege to provide these programs to my colleagues nationally. And now that has the spinoff is now these programs that we'll be giving to the public because of all the questions and concerns that people have for their friends that may have interest in needing implants to enhance their life.
And as we get older, and this is a term I guess you'll hear me use a lot, as we get older, because as we get older, we start to, you know, to me, I think of the body as almost like, I think of it as like a car or any kind of engine, you know, wears down.
Sure.
The parts get old.
Needs maintenance.
They get used. It needs maintenance. Sometimes we don't maintain it properly. You know, we don't change
need
oil.
Need an overhaul.
Right. Need an overhaul. what age group would you say is the wheelhouse, if you know what I mean?
For implants.
For implants, yeah.
Across the board. There are people in their teens, mid to late teens.
Who need implants.
That need implants. It's right. Not uncommon for people to be congenitally missing lateral incisors. Actually, it runs in our family where there are missing lateral incisors. We did an implant yesterday on a young man who was missing a premolar. And he had a baby. Probably in his mid-30s, and he still had a baby mm-hmm. tooth in the space of a premolar.
Right.
And it had gotten a little bit of infection and wasn't comfortable, so we replaced it with an implant. So it's across the board. The oldest person I've ever done implants on was 92. So it was a retired pediatrician, and he wanted a higher quality of life and didn't like it all the way his dentures were fitting on the bottom. So it could be as simple as placing two implants and give a denture something to snap into. And it completely changed the quality of his life for the next 3 years until he passed away.
Isn't it amazing, though, because people, especially women, I think, are living well into their 90s. You know, 100 is not unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are in pretty good shape, well into their 90s. And yes. They want to have a good quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Men, too, but, you know, we don't get as much, you know, we get 70, 80, that's about it. You know, these women, you know, they 95, 100. You know. But people want to have quality of life as long as they can.
Yes, absolutely, and they should. And teeth, either for aesthetics or for function, are a huge part of quality of life. Right. And an interesting statistic, 60% of our patients are either women or men that are in our office because of the women around them have encouraged them to come.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. So they are definitely the bigger driver of healthcare decisions and purchases. No question about it.
They tell us this in the advertising world, too. You know, men don't buy their own underwear even anymore. Their wives make the decision. The women drive it. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting statement.
Yeah, but it is driven by the women.
Yes. You know,
they respond more frequently to advertising.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. Now, we're talking about implants, and my question coming up, don't answer just yet because we're going to take a break, and that is, can anyone get dental implants? Or maybe a better question to ask would be, who are the best candidates for implants, and which people perhaps would not be a good candidate what type of person would not be a good candidate for a dental implant?
Good question.
All right.
Excellent.
You're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit their website. I love your URL. It's mygumdoc.com. Mygumdoc.com. For more information, don't forget they have a lecture coming up September 10th, Thursday, September 10th at Brio, one of my favorite restaurants on Peachtree. They're just south of Far in the Peach Shopping Center. It's at 6 p.m. They have to register.
Yes.
They have to let you know.
Yes. They visit the website to register or call the office. 404-352-1911, and all the we ask is just we need registration to get the catering, get the proper
you need a number
for catering.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Back with more of Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Edelstein, Bruce Edelstein, in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Maybe you can clear up a misnomer for me, and that is that my impression is that we suffer bone loss as we get older. Is this a function of aging, or are there certain things that we do that cause us to lose bone density, bone mass?
No, you should not lose bone density as you get older. As a matter of fact, if someone does have lowered bone density, then they should seek out the advice of a physician for the treatment of osteopenia or osteoporosis. So
is that more common in women than men?
Yes, it's much more common in women. And we actually sometimes will recommend that our patients, especially women that fit certain parameters of thin tissue biotypes, we will actually recommend that they seek out the advice of their physician and at least rule out that they do not have lowered bone density. But it isn't necessarily a function of age. It turns out that other bones tend to be more prone to lowered bone density than the jawbone. Now, looking at it another way, if someone does have osteopenia or osteoporosis, there have been studies that show that there is a correlation with more missing teeth. So if someone does have lowered bone density, then the lowered bone density that may occur in the jawbone may be more prone to infection,
really?
Loss of bone and tooth loss because of periodontal disease, which we talked about in a previous show, and we'll talk further.
So there's a synergy there.
Yes.
What else? What other kinds of things can cause loss of bone density besides, say, osteopenia or
gum disease, periodontal disease?
Well, periodontal disease, but that is that's treatable, and we talked about that previously, and we'll talk further. That's an entity that could be stopped. Gum recession is something that we can treat today and stop the recession of soft tissues around the teeth. So those are entities that we can usually resolve. You mentioned before the break, you mentioned something about candidates for implants and what conditions would prohibit someone from getting implants. And I did want to address that because that was a very, very good question.
I forgot that I asked it, but
well, you did.
I know, I see it here.
As a matter of fact, the last question you asked, I wondered why you didn't ask the first one, but that's okay. Not a problem. We work.
You'll see a lot of that over the years.
We work as a team. Anyone would be a candidate for dental implants that are reasonably healthy. It turns out that anyone that is healthy to withstand any minor surgical procedure would be a candidate for implants. Someone who's diabetic, if they're well controlled, they have the same success rate. The only thing that we would ask of a smoker is that there is some evidence to show that smoking, especially heavier smoking, may lead to a higher failure rate of implants. It doesn't mean we wouldn't do them, but we would advise that patient the more they cut down, the better their success rate would be. And by the way, while we're talking about success rate with implants are spectacular. In the lower jaw, after 20 years, you're talking about a better than 90% success rate. And in the upper jaw, after 20 years, better than a 95% success rate.
And our That's true. And that's what makes them so wonderful. They probably, well, not probably, do more than a bridge, more than dentures, more than any other restorative service. They do a bit higher than average success rate. And there are reasons for it. There are reasons why some practices have lower than average success rates. It's an average. And why some reasons have higher. We actually do fall into the higher than national average success rate. We're cutting edge with technology, but Dr. Edelstein is a conservative surgeon when it comes to extending healing times, taking certain things into consideration that wrap more of a success around our implants.
All right, suppose a person has a tooth pulled.
Uh-huh.
Okay. They've got a tooth that's cracked or broke or whatever
right.
It is, broken, and tooth is pulled. So now you have this gap here. Okay, and you've got teeth on either side of that gap.
Sure.
Is that person eventually, at some point, is that person going to need an implant, or can that person live the rest of his life or her life with that gap there?
Well, the biggest problem is that the teeth will shift. The remaining teeth will shift, the upper tooth will grow down, and that person is more prone to gum disease because of the tilted, shifted teeth. And
and you asked about bone loss earlier, Jeff. That bone is going to atrophy from a tooth not being in there. So if they wait years to finally get an implant, now they need some extensive bone grafting. It's not just an easy put in an implant.
All right, so let me try to, and again, you're talking to a layman here. So
perfect.
If I go to my general dentist and he pulls my tooth, should he then send me to somebody like you who's an expert in this particular area? We're talking about implants at this point. Should he say or she say, you know something, I think you need to consult somebody about an implant because of the things you just talked about, Sue.
Yeah.
You know, the...
Yes. Yes and no. My preference would be for me to pull the tooth because if I can control that part of someone's treatment, then I almost always would graft the site. And if I graft the site when the tooth is extracted, then number one, we can put an implant in sooner. Number two, studies have shown us that within 6 months, 50% of that bone atrophies and shrinks. And then some supplemental grafting might be necessary, which is more difficult than if we just put a graft in when we extract the tooth.
And so, more time.
So if I preserve the site, I can do a graft when I extract the tooth, preserve the soft and hard tissues. And there's one other thing. We have a CT in the office. I will take a CT of the area. And then when I place the implant...
Is that a CAT scan?
Yes, a CAT scan, yes. And I get a three-dimensional view of the bone underneath, and about 75% of the time, or maybe even more now, I'm putting the implants in an incisionless fashion if I preserve the ridge. I can make an opening the size of the implant, and no stitches, no sutures, no discomfort when the implant is placed whatsoever. These patients are almost 100% of the time back to work the next day without any downtime at all because there's no trauma to the adjacent tissues. That's what the benefit of me preserving the socket to begin with would be.
Would you say that a general dentist generally is qualified to extract a tooth?
Many of them have taken continuing ed that will enable them to do that, and some of them have taken continuing ed and they can preserve the socket as well. Not all of them. But say some of them would be capable of doing the same service, but that is by no means universally found, say.
Yeah, my general dentist, I've told you, you know who he is, and I've been using him for many years. You know, I needed to have a tooth pulled, and he said, and he referred me to somebody else to do it, an oral surgeon, I think it was, because he said, this is not my area. And you know something, I admired him for acknowledging it. That wasn't his area because I don't think there's anything worse than somebody getting into something they don't know much about. Do you sometimes face situations where you're presented with a particular case and you say to yourself, man, I wish they had come to me 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 months ago?
Every day.
Really?
That happens where I wish someone came to me sooner.
Is it sometimes their professional maybe who should have spoken up and said, you know something?
Possibly.
Yeah. Sometimes the patient delays. Their dentist may recommend it and the patient puts it off. Sometimes the dentist doesn't make that recommendation.
You know, sometimes though, aren't people they're very sometimes quick to blame their doctor, you know, whether it's dentistry, regular medicine, whatever it is, podiatry, you know, people, they're very quick to blame the physician. When a lot of times it's not the physician's fault, you know.
Correct.
The physician looks in his notes or her notes and says, you know something, I warned this person very strenuously that they need to get this done. They haven't gotten it done, but I mean, there's only so much I can do.
Right.
You know?
You know, there's an old expression that it's easy to fault someone that came before you until you've walked in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I see cases and then, you know, this should have been handled a little differently. And then I treat the patient and I make a recommendation and I don't see them for 4.5 months. You know, and the situation is different. It's worse. Or they don't follow through with the post-op recommendation. So that is not uncommon. So a lot of people try to do the best that they can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, I would like to talk about the cost of dental implants. We said generally that dental insurance doesn't cover them. I see in my notes here, sometimes one's medical insurance would cover implants, but it looks like there are a lot of situations in which there's just no insurance coverage and people are going to have to pay out of pocket. So, I mean, this is going to be a question that probably arises very, very early in the transaction. How much? Folks, you're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. Your office is located on Peachtree, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital and right next to the Darlington, was it an apartment?
An apartment building.
Apartment building?
Always was and still is.
Really? Apartments,
yeah.
Strictly
just
apartments.
Not the same quality it was at one time.
Yeah, and it's never gone condo, huh?
No.
All right. Back with more of Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. And I'd like to remind our audience that, Dr. Edelstein, you're going to have a lecture for the public, a seminar, on Thursday, September 10th at Brio Restaurant at 6 p.m. It's in the Peach Shopping Center, very centrally located.
Yes.
Now, if you work in town or you live in town, you know, inside the perimeter, this is, you know, hop, skip, and a jump for you. And I've eaten at Brio many times. It's gorgeous there. I love it. I think I know what room you're going to be in, too.
Yeah, it's a terrific room, and it's complimentary. It's to help people make decisions about implants.
And there's no, I just want to, you know, reiterate this. There's no pressure on anybody. You're not
Zero.
Trying to sell
no.
anything.
Zero.
It really is.
Information
I mean,
only.
At the break, Jeff, you said we would talk about the cost of implants, and we began to also recognize that it is tough to afford healthcare sometimes. Sometimes an exam can be costly. By the time you take an x-ray, a CT scan, you gather information. We pride ourselves on giving a lot of good information. Our time has a cost associated with it. So the implant lectures that we're doing is really just a way to help people afford information. They can't get x-rays and CT scans, but they certainly can come and learn. And it doesn't cost them anything. It's just a community service, as Dr. Edelstein said earlier. And it's just a way to help our patients and our city and our members of our city have a vehicle to come at no cost.
You know, when I'm talking to people about advertising, and I'm trying to see if we're a good match and perhaps we can help them achieve their marketing goals, et cetera. It's not unusual. I mean, the third question that's asked of me is, how much is it?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I found, too, is that with a lot of things, so the cost is right there at the forefront of their mind. And it may be the most important question that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the top priority is the cost. Then after we explain things to them and they start to learn about what we're doing, it's still important to them, but it's no longer number one. It moves down the ladder maybe to third or fourth, fifth. Do you know what I'm saying? Is it the same in your particular profession?
Absolutely. As soon as someone realizes the expertise involved, the experience level that we have, the cost becomes secondary. Now, what we've instituted a number of initiatives in our office to help to eliminate obstacles to cost. One thing that we did about 8 months ago, and we're continuing for the foreseeable future, is our new patient special. By the time you do an examination, a consultation, a review,
CT scan,
photographs, CT scan, plain x-rays, it could be over $600. And we have a new patient special for $129. We'll do all of that. And what we found, it's been quite rewarding to eliminate that obstacle for that first visit. The second thing that we've done to make dentistry more affordable, because a lot of it is not covered by insurance, any treatment plan that's over $2,000 will give 10% off.
Excellent.
That would be if there's no financing involved. If there is financing, then guess what? We offer interest-free financing for a year, and the office will pay the financing charge, which is 10% for the year. So someone can either have 10% going toward free financing or 10% off right off the top.
Some of them pay the whole thing off before the year, before the end of the year.
There's no prepayment penalty. Most of them would. And then the third thing that I have done is if I need to do multiple implants, there is some sort of savings because we're not setting up the room multiple times. So if I have to do five implants, I generally will do the fifth one free. Mm. I'll do it for the price of four, plus the 10%, plus the new patient special. So we've instituted a number of things in our office to make some of these costly but hugely beneficial procedures that people can have done more affordable.
You know, my wife got her car fixed and it needed several things done. And she went to somebody that has done a lot of work for us and we know them and trust them and said it's going to cost, you know, $200 or something like that. And my wife said, you know, $200? What are you kidding? And the guy said to her, what are you kidding? He said, this costs $500 anywhere else. I'm doing this for you as a favor because I like you and I've worked with you for 15 years. But people, a lot of times, they don't realize how expensive it is for you to operate an office and bring quality to patients at the same time.
Or the time spent behind that patient's visit. Particularly, implant cases require coordination between the surgeon, Dr. Edelstein, and the dentist who's going to make the crowns or the bridge or the denture that will snap on top of the implants. There could be, by the time emails and meetings are set up and my time to schedule all, there could be 2 to 3 hours of Dr. Edelstein's time outside the office or during his lunch break.
I guess we don't charge for that. Right.
But there's a nominal small consultation fee.
Exactly.
And patients don't always know what goes beyond that.
I guess what I'm saying is if somebody complains about $129 for what they're getting, they don't understand.
Yeah.
Like my wife didn't understand what all she was getting. You know what I mean?
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the implants themselves, the procedure.
Perfect.
What happens? Explain how it works. What can we expect? Is it going to be painful? You know, can I be knocked out if I want to be, I need to be, et cetera, et cetera. Folks, you're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Their office is located on Peachtree, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital, next to the Darlington. What's the population right now? 6.3 million, I think. That's the place that shows the current. They're famous for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I was them, I'd never get rid of that.
No.
You know? That's what they're famous for. Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. Back with more of Open Wide with Sue and Dr. Bruce Edelstein in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Sue, let me ask you, perhaps here. We've talked a lot about the implants. I've asked a lot of questions about the implants. I haven't really asked you what it is and how it's done. What can we expect for those of us who have never had an implant? I've never had an implant.
Okay.
What can we expect when we come to your office?
Sure. I can say invariably, a lot of patients are nervous. They look at us with disbelief when we say it's going to be easy. I promise. After it's over, they look at us and say, wow, it really was easy. 100% of the time that's going to happen. They are very easy to do. There's, of course, if the initial prep has already been done, the extraction, and there's enough bone. If not, we've given the area bone. But the day of the implant procedure, the patient's made numb locally in that spot. That's all that's needed from our perspective. If the patient's a little nervous, we can prescribe a sedative. If they're really nervous, they can go to sleep with IV sedation, but that's their choice. We don't impose that upon them. I think we've done one IV sedation case, maybe two this year, that we placed implants. That's it. The majority of the time, we get them through nicely with just what our patients would call Novocaine.
All right, so how does it work? So we establish that it's titanium.
Correct.
And by the way, aren't like hip replacements and knee replacements another titanium?
Yeah,
too.
I've got titanium in my elbow. Dr. Edelstein's got a nice titanium knee.
I do. Okay, and aren't there titanium golf clubs out there too?
Because
titanium is strong, you know.
Probably.
Okay, so how does it work? So let me ask you this first of all, because just so I can get my arms around this. If I have a tooth pulled, should you do the implant right then and there at that time? Is that the ideal time in which to do the implant?
Excellent question. And the answer is, it depends. And Sue mentioned something about our success rate, and the reason why we have a very high success rate is because every case is different. If it's a molar tooth, then usually placing an implant the time it's extracted is kind of difficult because there's a larger socket involved. It's harder to place the implant right in the middle of the socket. There might be infection that could prohibit implant placement at the same time. If it's a front tooth and or a premolar and the root is on kind of short, I think an ideal thing to do would be to place an implant at the same time. I think we did an immediate implant placement at the time the tooth was extracted. We did one this week and one last week.
Mm-hmm.
And then I probably did, before that, I probably did 8 or 10, not at the same time, because it's all based upon case selection and it's all different.
So in the front, maybe one of the benefits is that maybe it's an unintended benefit, but it's a benefit nonetheless, that they're not walking around with a tooth missing.
Walking around with a tooth missing, no matter what the protocol is.
No one would leave my office without a tooth in the front. We would always have either a temporary crown on top of the implant. That would be necessary.
So can you make the implant so that it's the same color as the surrounding teeth? It doesn't look like it's...
Well, that would be the crown on top. An implant is basically three parts. There's a root replacement that goes into the bone. Then there's an abutment, which basically is the connection that goes on top of the implant. And then there's typically a crown or superstructure that goes on top of the abutment. So the best way to look at it is exactly that way. There are three parts to it.
And the titanium, the post that goes into the bone there. So the bone grows around that post.
The bone fuses so intimately with that implant post that you can't really remove it. I mean, it literally is fused to the bone.
How long does it take for this
process? A few
months.
Well, it's like a broken bone. I mean, it takes a few months for the bone cells to deposit bone. And now, one thing that we did touch on, but we didn't talk about it, is over the last 30 years or so, there have been improvements to the implants. And 30 years ago, they were smooth surfaces. So there weren't any pores. Today, most implants are still made out of titanium, but the surfaces are either acid etched or they're sandblasted. That gives the surface some microporosity. So the bone grows into the little pores. So actually, the bone grows in quicker. And there are new implant designs. Zimmer has an implant that has actual, holes inside the implant. It's just as strong, and the bone could fuse to that implant in about a month. So there have been constant improvements with implant designs.
How do you keep up with the technology?
By reading the journals and taking courses and talking to colleagues. So all of the above.
And what about situations where, because you said sometimes you'll do, let's say, 5 implants on a given patient, and what situations is a patient, is it called for, multiple implants?
Well, the more missing teeth, the more implants will be needed. 5 implants and 1 arch, that would probably be someone who's missing all their teeth in that particular arch. More commonly than not, we're doing 1 or 2 implants because a lot of our patients are missing 1 or 2 teeth. So it's all, again, it's all...
If a person takes good care of their teeth and they see their dentist regularly, and they do all the things you're supposed to do, the flossing, et cetera, the cost of their dental care over their lifetime is going to be a lot less than somebody who has not, somebody who's procrastinated and waited and waited and waited and said, you know something, I don't need an implant right now. I don't see anything wrong. Feels fine there. You know, everything, you know, how does it feel? You know? You know what I'm saying?
You know what we're seeing a good bit of lately, the past year or so, because of the recession, some people may either have lost the job or maybe the spouse lost their job and they've stayed away for a few years. And now they're back. And rather than keeping up, some have kept up beautifully with their preventative care and their routine cleanings, which is vitally important, but some have not. And all of a sudden they're back and they can't believe how the extent of their problems.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. So
from waiting.
From waiting and postponing. The best thing that someone could do is to keep up with their preventative mm-hmm. dentistry. Do you remember the expression? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Sure.
So the best thing that folks could do is to keep up with their routine cleanings.
How do you take care of an implant? Do you take care of it the same way you would a regular tooth?
Exactly the same way. They
you brush it.
They brush and floss around it.
Have it cleaned regularly by your dental hygienist.
Yeah. Just like a regular tooth. And I'd say universally, people feel like they're their own teeth and roots. They can't tell the difference between their own teeth and implants.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
And I think we can't overemphasize the what it does for a person's self-esteem. You were talking about teenagers. You've had teenagers where you've got to do implants, and you know they're very, well, adults are too sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're vain. You know, they want to look
for
good.
Sure.
They want to fit in with everybody else. They don't want to.
For sure. I have a 22-year-old niece who needs an implant. She was a triplet, born premature. As a result, one of her front tooth did not form. She went through all of her teen years. You can't really put an implant in a young adult until they're done growing. I don't know, 18, 19 to 21 is usually the prime time for them. And she went through all of her teenage years mortified because she had a false tooth that kind of she just took in and out. If her first boyfriend ever found out she was wearing it, I mean, they really do. There's a whole self-conscious. They go to their prom. They have their first date, their first kiss with a false tooth that comes in and out that they would die if anybody knew about from a teenage perspective. But we certainly do have a lot of grown adults, male and female alike, that also are concerned with the aesthetics and how it looks.
To add to what Sue just said, then when that person enters the workforce, an attractive smile is a key to someone's advancement in a career. And then once they've established a career, an attractive smile is much more attractive to the opposite sex or the same sex, depending upon what someone's orientation
that's,
is.
That's a whole other show.
It is another show. That's why I stuttered for a second. But it turns out that an attractive smile is someone who has a significant other will be much more likely to be intimate if they had an attractive smile.
Do you sometimes see an implant on somebody, not a patient, just somebody you meet somewhere. You can tell it's an implant and you see to yourself, this isn't matching up very well, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have a friend.
What's funny too is for me, I don't notice the really pretty ones because the really pretty ones are invisible. You really just, what sticks out is the not so pretty ones.
Yeah.
You remember those.
And it's like umpires. If they're doing their job, you don't notice them.
Yeah, exactly.
If they're not doing it, well, they're.
Yeah, and that's how it should be.
By the way, may I say you both have beautiful teeth.
Mine are mine. His
Thank
are
you.
His.
Don't you think it's important?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Have you ever gone to a dental professional and the teeth don't look all that great? And you're like,
yes.
I've known a few along the way.
And you're saying to yourself, I don't know about these people. You know,
I've worked for dentists who never sat in my chair and had their teeth cleaned for years and years.
Really?
Yeah, it happens. Yeah. Actually, Dr. Edelstein, you might be the first one. You have your teeth cleaned every 3 months, whatever hygienist has an opening or a cancellation. He is the first dentist I've ever worked for that has his teeth cleaned on a regular basis. Imagine. Okay. I mean, that's a shocking stat.
That is a shocking statistic.
Yeah, yes. It is.
One more question.
Sure.
How long will an implant last? Is it permanent? I mean, is it going to last the rest of my life?
We don't like to view anything as permanent, but looking at the statistics, implants last a long, long time on average. As I mentioned, 90 to 95% of them are there 20 years later. And now that we have data from 25 and 30 years, the statistics are staggering. The implants last a long, long time. Now that I've been doing them for 30 years and more frequently for 20 and 25 years, I have patients back in the practice for 20 years that have the implants are perfectly healthy. I put them in 20 years ago and they're perfectly healthy, just like the day I put them in.
Outstanding. Do we have an easier time eating with an implant?
Oh, yeah.
Than with the alternative? Dentures?
Not much off.
For sure.
Dentures will slide around, slip around.
No parallel.
The analogy that I'd like to make for that is an artificial leg is an impairment to walking. A denture is the same.
It'd be a lot better if we could grow back our leg and have your original leg and, with the bone grafts that you're talking about and so on and so forth.
That would be wonderful.
And walk around with an artificial apparatus.
You know, maybe one day we will.
Maybe one day we will. And on that note, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. I've learned a lot today. I didn't know what implants were. I mean, I've heard a lot about them, but I really didn't know what it was. And it's just hearing the word implants kind of scared me. But you've allayed my fears. So
dental
you've done it with great alacrity, too.
Dental implants, that is.
Dental implants. Yeah. That's another show, too. We can help you with that. All right. I'm Jeff Davis. So long, everybody. Thanks for being with us.
This has been Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein, Tuesdays at noon, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.